All right, this is the Michael Slate Show, and I'm Michael Slate, and this is going to have to be very quick. At the back end of the show, we'll be hearing the latest episode of Emancipate Humanity, the podcast of Bob Avakian, the chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party. And right now, we're going to be hearing an interview I did with Sansara Taylor, a co-initiator of Refused Fascism and co-host of the Revolution Nothing Less show on YouTube. Sansara is currently in Washington, D.C. for reasons she will explain. I also wanted to say that because of the pandemic, which means doing much of the show from home, some of the sounds is not equal to the high quality we usually have here at the Michael Slate Show, but it's definitely worth listening to. So, Sansara Taylor, welcome to the show.
Hi, Michael. It's really great to be with you. Thank you.
I know we have a lot to talk about today, but I wanted to start off with you giving people a sense of why you felt compelled to go there, to go to D.C. for this demonstration, to oppose the confirmation of Amy Coney Barrett to the Supreme Court. This is something far worse than a normal bad news event, and I understand that, but I think people need to understand what was that all about.
Yeah, I came out here to Washington, D.C. together with other volunteers from RefuseFascism.org to protest the confirmation of Amy Coney Barrett, and even more, to call forward opposition and the demand in the streets that Trump-Pence must go now. This whole regime needs to go, and it needs to be driven from power. That's something that I want to talk about in a minute, why it's essential to vote against, to turn out and vote in record numbers, but why relying on votes alone to stop Trump and remove Trump is not a winning strategy. So I actually think that's underscored by this confirmation hearing in two big ways. But before I tell you the two big ways, I also want to say I came out here as well to report for the RNL, the Revolution Nothing Less show. So that's, I've been commenting on this on the show. I can tell a little bit more about that for people who want more information about it. But the two big ways that this confirmation is really, really dangerous to the interests of humanity and needs to be opposed are, number one, Donald Trump has openly told the world repeatedly that he wants to fill this seat on the Supreme Court in record speed before the election, precisely because he wants the courts to rule in his favor should the election be contested. And meanwhile, he's doing everything in his power to make sure that the election is contested if he doesn't win. He has called for an army of ex-military and police to go to the voting polls and intimidate voters. 50,000 he wants to recruit in, quote, Democrat-run cities. He is calling mail-in ballots fraudulent. He has almost every day refused to promise a peaceful transfer of power if he loses. He said the only way he can lose is if the election is rigged. He's floated the idea of postponing the election. So all of these things he's doing in advance to contest. He's right now contesting the election. He's right now stealing the election. And he's telling you that he wants the Supreme Court to be an instrument of this. And that's a motivating factor in him ramming this through. And Ted Cruz said the same thing. The Republicans have said the same thing. They are indeed ramming through this confirmation at record speed, unprecedented speed, in a very dangerous way, and it's scheduled to go forward before the election. So that's number one. This is actually part of a fascist rolling coup that is happening before our eyes. But that's not all that's at stake with this confirmation. Amy Coney Barrett replacing Ruth Bader Ginsburg on the Supreme Court dramatically, qualitatively tips the balance of the highest court in the land from one that was pretty evenly split between a liberal bloc and a highly conservative slash fascist bloc of the court that was more conservative, more fascist than liberal, but it was still split to a degree to being an overwhelming pro-fascist, pro-theocracy majority on the highest court in the land. And this is going to have enormous dramatic implications for the lives of millions and millions in this country. It's something that a Christian fascist, Christian fundamentalist movement in this country has been working at for decades. And I'm not talking about regular Christians. I'm talking about who just want to practice their own beliefs in their own lives, or even are motivated by their religious beliefs to fight against injustice. I'm talking about Christian fascists, people who want to take a fundamentalist, biblical, literalist, Old Testament view of Christianity and impose it as the law of the land through the power of the courts and the states and everything else. And so you're going to have with Amy Coney Barrett and why Trump appointed her, why the Christian fundamentalists have been out in the streets elated and in joy, why they recommended her, why they're cheering right now, is this will be a court that is openly hostile to the rights of women, to exercise reproductive freedom through access to abortion or even birth control, hostile to the rights of LGBTQ people, stripping away recently won rights and slamming people back into the closets and worse. This will be a court, as the movement behind it has been pushing for, that is increasingly redefining religious freedom, not to mean the freedom of people to practice their own conscience, religious people to live by their values in their private lives, or people to not practice religion in their private lives, but to reinterpret religious freedom to mean the right of religious bigots and Christian fascists and Christian fundamentalists to impose their bigotry on others through the power of the state. And this is incredibly, incredibly dangerous. So both these things are concentrated in this confirmation. The program of fascism and Christian fascism making a major leap in the highest legal body in the country, and the securing of this highest legal body in the country to be an instrument of a fascist rolling coup to lock that power in place, no matter how people vote in November. This is extraordinarily dangerous. So that's why I came to D.C. and have been part of protests here against this confirmation, but most of all to raise the demand that the whole regime must go and that the people are going to have to pour into the streets. And this is what we're organizing for here, to come into the streets and raise this demand ourselves. Yes, voting is essential in this election season, but Trump and now Amy Coney Barrett, who refused to endorse a peaceful transfer of power during the confirmation hearings, we could talk about that too, have given us every reason to believe that the election will not determine, the election alone, the ballots alone will not determine who is in power come January. That's going to be settled. If it's going to be Trump's removal, people also have to come into the streets in mass nonviolent protests and demand his removal. So that's the big answer, but it's big stakes. So I hope that that is clear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, let's dig into this a little bit more, though, because you were talking about her, about Amy Coney Barrett. This is fascism in its full blossom. And there's a way that it's done that a lot of people who probably would not be a part of that, would not want to do that, but a lot of people are just being sucked in and going along with this, and the kind of resistance we need doesn't match the actual horror that's been put into place. And I think this thing about the shift in the way things have been, all of this in society, the whole way this has been done, and the way it's been done is as part of a fascist coup by the Trump regime. And that's something I think a lot of people have a very difficult time wrapping their heads around.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, one of the things that happened in this confirmation hearing was Amy Coney Barrett was asked point blank if the Constitution gives Trump, the president, the power to postpone the election. And that is actually built into the Constitution, that the president cannot change the election date. And she refused to back that up. She was asked about the peaceful transfer of power, and she refused to endorse it. She was asked if armed intimidation at the polling places is illegal, and she refused to say unequivocally that it is. She was asked if Trump has the power to pardon himself, and she refused to speak to that. So she is, again, giving every indication that Trump has good reason to believe that she would lend herself to be an instrument of stealing this election. So it's just an incredible high stakes. And for their part, the Democratic Party, by showing up, the second that Donald Trump said that he does not accept the peaceful transfer of power and he wants the courts to throw the election in his favor, that instant they should have opened new impeachment hearings. That is invalidating to be president, even by their own rules. But instead, they showed up for this confirmation hearing. They lent legitimacy to an illegitimate process, demonstrating yet again that the Democrats cannot be relied on to stop this fascist America. Just like last night we saw Donald Trump was spewing white supremacist lies, refusing to condemn, basically endorsing QAnon on national television, sparring once again with reporters in his town hall. And meanwhile, on the other station, Joe Biden is speaking calmly, reassuring people, telling people just turn out and vote and don't worry. And these Democrats are telling people to rely on the vote alone when Donald Trump is demonstrating over and over and over again that he won't respect the vote alone. And the Democrats are telling people over and over again to rely on the institutions and the norms and the rule book that Donald Trump is shredding. So this is, again, why the message refusefascism.org, the message that we brought, is, look, there are millions who don't want to accept a fascist America. There are millions and millions of us who don't want to see women stripped of their right to have to access an abortion or even birth control, be forced to have children against their will. There are millions and millions of us who do not want to see LGBTQ people slammed backwards. There are millions of us who were in the streets just this past summer for Black Lives. We rocked this country. We inspired the world. 15 million people in the streets, including in the streets of Washington, D.C. We drove Donald Trump into a bunker. We compelled the highest military officer in the country to come out and apologize for following Donald Trump's orders when he walked with Trump to the church to hold the Bible upside down after the military cleared Lafayette Square. We have power. The people have power that is right now being untapped because people are sitting back waiting for the elections to solve problems that we have no good reason to expect the elections will solve. And I do believe people should vote in overwhelming numbers. I believe that will make a difference in depriving Trump of the mantle of legitimacy of an overwhelming victory if we can secure that. But to rely on that at this point is to be collaborators in fascism, because it's clear that Trump is not going to respect that alone. And so the message that we came with Refuse Fascism is that we need to step back into the streets. We need to get back into the streets in overwhelming numbers like we did over the summer for Black Lives, and even more so, because all of that and more is at stake right now. The road to a world where Black Lives matter, the road to a world where women are not reduced to incubators and enslaved by open Dark Ages patriarchy, a world where immigrants are not locked in cages and concentration camps with their children ripped from them, a world where the planet is not set on fire even more rapidly because of the acceleration of climate destruction of this regime, a world where we don't have a demented bully with his finger on the nuclear trigger, a world to any of that and all of that goes through removing this regime from power. That is the demand Trump Pence out now, that everybody, every different movement, every different struggle, every different walk of life, whether you've been in a movement or not, that's the demand we all have to come into the streets and make. And if we do, we can see what seems impossible today become possible. We actually can create the demand from below that compels those in power to respond, to do what they refuse to do now, which is to fight Trump and compel him out of office because of all of his illegitimacy and criminality and fascism. If we make that demand, we can compel that. And so I want to appeal to everybody listening very directly. If you are sick at heart, if you are losing sleep, if you have a sense that we are in dangerous times, you're right about that. But there's something we need to do about that. People have been in the streets every single day this month, raising this demand and doing ongoing protests. That needs to grow from hundreds to thousands, from thousands to millions, to actually call for that outrage before it is too late. And we're approaching those times.
Mm-hmm. Let me remind you that you're listening to the Michael Slate Show. We're talking today with Sansara Taylor. She's a co-initiator of RefuseFascism.org, and she is also part of one of my favorite shows that I listen to each and every week. It is RNL, Revolution. Sorry, Sansara, I just got
Revolution,
RNL,
nothing less show. There you go.
Okay. All right. Anyway, so I wanted to actually continue this a little bit longer because, you know, look, the fact is that people are facing a fascist coup that's already in motion, you know, and we need to stop it. And what you're saying is very important to people, but I want to know how people are looking at that. You know, you've got Democrats that should be out there. You've got people who are actually throwing and voting, but there really needs to be a leap, you know, and I think that's important. And I know you guys have said this as well, that it's important that that's paid attention to, but that there is this leap that people have to make. I mean, they have actually brought into being actually full-blown Nazi people who are actually out there organizing, who are part of their whole gang and all this other stuff, and this is a situation that we're faced with, that there's actually a massive, you know, I mean, all the various people that are out in the mountains and coming down and, you know, shouting their yahoos and all this other stuff and carrying their, it's like they're carrying their swords to go out and chop down, you know, anything that even smells progressive. There's a real dynamic developing between the people who are fighting to maintain a progressive situation, who are fighting to maintain a situation where people can live, and who are up against each and every day, and more so, these open fascist Nazi dogs that are out there to not just verbally chop people down, but to actually cause and get ready for an all-out assault on people.
Yeah, look, I think you had Trump the other day tell the world openly that he sent in the U.S. Marshals to assassinate somebody who he accused of violence in Portland. Now, what actually happened, we don't know with this guy. What he was accused of by Trump is killing somebody, but we don't actually know because he never got a trial because the U.S. Marshals went in and assassinated him. And it's coming out more and more that they didn't even try to identify themselves, that he didn't have a weapon, that there was no legitimate cause for them to do this, except that Trump ordered it and he bragged about it after the fact. Now, and he called it retribution. This is the open terroristic form of rule that Trump is bringing. This is why we call it fascism. And right now, these fascists have the initiative. But here's the thing, and there's two sides to this. It's not to reassure us, but the reality is they don't have the majority. Now, that doesn't matter if we sit back passively and allow and play by the rules that they're ripping up. It doesn't matter if we're the majority. There are many times in history when a minority has ruled in a terroristic way over the majority. That was Nazi Germany. Most people weren't Nazis, but they went along. That was South Africa under apartheid. There's all kinds of times in history when a minority, just being the majority, does not mean you'll win. On the other hand, if we act, and it's not too late, if we act, if we come out of our homes, if we, yes, go to the polls and overcome all the obstacles that Trump is putting in the way and cast those votes, that matters, but we also need to do more than that. If we come into the public squares in our mass, nonviolent, sustained, determined, and day after day relentless protest, we can remove a hated regime. It's been done all over the world. This has been proven. It's been proven to work when millions come into the streets and persist day after day, nonviolently refusing to be provoked, but also refusing to be intimidated. We can create the kind of political crisis where they are removed from power. We saw the power of this, of the people in the streets over the summer. I talked about this a minute ago. I was in Minneapolis during the George Floyd uprising. I talked to somebody who had spent years, decades, trying to get the police out of the schools, out of the high schools, criminalizing Black and Latino youth in their neighborhoods and in their places of education. And they said overnight, within a week, all of a sudden, the police were removed from the schools because people stood up. When people stand up, what seems impossible one day can become possible. And again, our majority should not leave us to be complacent. And I'm afraid that's happened for far too long. That's how we've gotten in this dangerous place. On the other hand, it should give us the confidence that if we step out now, if we act, we actually do have the power to overwhelm their terror. And this is where the people who have begun, I have to give a big shout out to the people in the Rev Clubs, the people in RefuseFascism.org from different political perspectives, some of them with Extinction Rebellion, some of them with other groups, some of them coming on their own, who have been down in Pershing Square in Los Angeles every day since October 3rd, people doing the same thing around the country who are out there as a pole of opposition so that there's a force, as people are being shocked and horrified by what the regime is doing, that it's not, wow, why isn't somebody doing something? They can see people out there doing something to join with. It matters that this has begun, but it really matters right now that more people join with it, that it grows. Probably most people listening don't even know these protests have been happening. They need to grow. Everybody listening should go down and become part of this. Bring your friends, your family. Bring them this plan and this vision of mass nonviolent protest demanding Trump pence out now. This is actually a road to deliver an enormous gift to humanity, to put a stop to a fascist America that really imperils humanity's future. And if we don't, there's no reason to believe, there's no good reason to believe that if we don't, that this regime will not carry forward with what they have promised and what they have begun, which is violent armed intimidation at the polls, which is to declare any electoral loss fraudulent, which is to throw it to the Supreme Court, which they are packing, and which is to stay in power, regardless of the will of the people, regardless of the cost to the planet, regardless of the cost to the future of humanity. That's where we're sitting. That's the historical moment we're in. I mean, it's a crazy, unique situation to be in human history. We didn't pick it. There's never been anything paralleled. But I would defy anybody to argue to me that's not what we are, that's not what we're facing, like in a time of climate destruction, in a time when this is the most militarized, nuclear-armed power in the world, at a time when there is an open white supremacist revengeist movement that wants to extract revenge against black people for daring to have stood up, at a time when there's concentration camps on the border and open theocrats in power. This is what we're facing. So we can either sit back and acquiesce to it, or we can stand up and stop it. That's the choice we have to make.
Definitely. Now, I have one thing I was going back and forth on whether or not I was going to ask you this, but since you brought it up, I'm going to ask you this. I mean, I've heard too many people just dismissing Pence. And there's a whole thing here of Pence's role in all this, which is very important for people to understand and to take on. And this is a dangerous, dangerous person. And his role in the society is in the fascist plan is not to sit back and smile. He is actually a Christian fascist waiting to get as deep as he can into things and change the world on that basis.
It's true.
I'm wondering what you think about it.
I think, honestly, we live in such a divided society right now, and it's been that way. That's objective. That was before Trump. And you increasingly have it where people listen to entirely different news sources, entirely different information sources, that a lot of people who are not part of the theocratic movement have no idea how deadly serious it is and how extreme it is. And so I'm glad you asked about it, because I've been here in D.C., and one of the things in D.C. is that it's just crawling right now during the Amy Coney Barrett confirmation hearings, just crawling with fanatical Christian fundamentalist zealots eager to completely install a theocracy. And among a lot of the other protesters here, and there's not nearly enough protesters, so shout out to everybody who has shown up, I have heard over and over again people being shocked to see such fanatics in the streets, because they're not aware of this movement, because it's got its own information network, it's got its own church network. There's a divide. A lot of people, they just don't encounter it. So I want to say there is a deadly serious, decades in the making, hands on the levers of power, extreme fundamentalist movement that wants to impose Christian theocratic fascism and is very close. I'll give two quick examples, because people need to understand the concreteness of this. When Mike Pence was governor in Indiana, they enacted very extreme anti-abortion, anti-LGBTQ laws, and they had a situation where a woman, Purvi Patel, was in a desperate situation. She either had a miscarriage or she, out of shame and fear, tried to induce her own abortion outside a medical facility. It's unclear which. She was sentenced to 20 years in prison. She wasn't given help. What a horrible situation. Let's make sure that there's sexual education resources, birth control, and abortion access to all women, that a woman would be driven to either self-induce an abortion or suffer a miscarriage in shame. Let's get services to her. That was not the response of Mike Pence's Indiana. The response was to send the police to her, to force medical professionals to testify against her, and to sentence her to 20 years in prison. This is a Handmaid's Tale. Another example that people should know is that one of the people that Donald Trump put in charge of Health and Human Services and the Office for Refugee Resettlement kept a chart, a spreadsheet, in his computer of the menstruation cycles of teenage girls in detention, immigrant girls, underage girls who had fled their homelands, many of them separated from their parents, put in concentration camps. And what was his concern was their menstruation cycles, so he could monitor their pregnancy individually. This is a real thing that happened. And he would do everything in his power to personally counsel and interfere with women, underage girls accessing abortion if they found out they were pregnant, many of them through the experience of sexual assault while they were traveling to this country. This is the kind of fanaticism. I'm giving two little examples, but there's millions, and the implications are far greater. But I think sometimes you need to hear a real evidence. I mean, the idea, a spreadsheet of teenage girls' menstruation cycles who are in concentration camps that you put in the camps, and you're concerned to come and counsel them away from an abortion. This is Handmaid's Tale. This is just a small sample of what they really mean to impose on society as a whole.
Absolutely. Now, on that note, we're going to have to wrap this up, but I do want to let people know that you are, in addition to what you're doing here in terms of, you know, being a co-initiator of RefuseFascism.org, you are also, as you mentioned earlier, part of the RNL, Revolution Nothing Less. Tell people what that is and how they can catch it.
Yeah, thanks so much, Michael, and I appreciate you giving an extra few minutes here because there's so much to talk about. So I am a co-host of the RNL, the Revolution Nothing Less show on YouTube. You can find it at youtube.com/therevcoms. I also encourage everybody on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook to connect with @therevcoms. That's our social media handle. And we get the name of our show from a speech actually given by the revolutionary leader Bob Avakian, who I know you play quite a bit on your show, which is good. Mm-hmm. And he is the architect of a new framework for human emancipation, the new communism. We root ourselves on the show in that framework. We popularize it and we apply it to the world. And we're commenting on developments. We're also highlighting the movement for revolution, what it's up to, how it's impacting the world, how people can join it. And right now, a huge concentration of that, and frankly, it converges with what everybody should be concerned with right now, is to stop a fascist America. So we've been covering the rolling coup of Donald Trump. We've been doing exposures on their crimes against immigrants. We've been highlighting the struggles of people standing up. We do interviews with legal experts and other kinds of authors and artists. So I definitely invite everybody to come. Continue the conversation, subscribe, and watch every Thursday with youtube.com/therevcoms. It's called the Revolution Nothing Less Show. Leave us a comment, let us know what you think, and we'll learn from you, and you can learn from us. So thanks, Michael.
All right, Sansara Taylor, thank you very much for joining us today.
Beautiful.
Now we'll hear the latest episode of Emancipate Humanity, the podcast of Bob Avakian, introduced by Sansara Taylor.
Welcome to Emancipate Humanity with Bob Avakian, a podcast presented by the RNL, the Revolution Nothing Less show. My name is Sansara Taylor, and I'm one of the hosts for this new podcast series featuring the voice and work of Bob Avakian. Bob Avakian, BA, is a revolutionary. He came out of the free speech movement in Berkeley in the 1960s, then worked with the early Black Panther Party, and then went on to become a revolutionary communist. Over the decades since, he has worked to develop a whole new framework of human emancipation, the new communism. Some of what you will hear in this series of podcasts will be short, biting commentary. Others, deep explorations and answers to burning questions. You will be provoked, challenged, and struggled with to think and to rethink, to shed illusions. You will laugh and be moved by BA's passion for the people and his refusal to accept all the unnecessary suffering here and all over the world. All of this has one aim and one aim only, to enable all of us to be part of a great struggle for an actual revolution, to emancipate all humanity. This is our invitation to you to experience Bob Avakian. Today's episode of Emancipate Humanity with Bob Avakian features four pieces published on the website revcom.us in the late summer of 2020. The themes of today's episode: Trump and pigs, white supremacy and F***er Carlson, Colin Kaepernick, and the truth about America. The first short piece we will hear is Trump and pigs, a racist love affair. Followed by Donald Trump isn't tough, he's a bloated bag of fascist feces, part one. Then, Tucker Carlson, fascist Fox News, and the broadcast of white supremacy. After that, we'll hear Donald Trump isn't tough. He's a bloated bag of fascist feces, part two. Who really has heart? Finally, Colin Kaepernick, LeBron James, and the whole truth. So let's get right to Bob Avakian, Trump and pigs, a racist love affair.
What percentage of cops, especially white cops, are not supporters of Trump? Maybe 10% or less. That small number is about the same percentage of black people who are Trump supporters. That should tell you something. It should tell you a lot. For one thing, it shows why the struggle against police brutality and murder is closely linked with the need for mass mobilization to demand Trump Pence out now. And beyond that, it shows how rotten to the core this whole system is. A system of power not of the people, but over the people, which has brought to the presidency the hardcore racist Trump and relies on a police force of hardcore racists. Think about it.
That was Trump and Pigs, a racist love affair. Next up, Donald Trump isn't tough. He's a bloated bag of fascist feces, part one.
Donald Trump isn't tough. He's a bloated bag of fascist feces. There's nothing brave or bad about Trump with his threat to use the military to violently attack people protesting against the murder of George Floyd and all the racist brutality and murder by police. Anybody can act tough when they are calling on a massive machinery of violence and destruction, like the U.S. military, to back them up. The ones who are showing real courage and heart are the masses of people of all races and genders who have taken to the streets to demand an end to this brutality and murder and have defied curfews and braved assaults from police and National Guard forces. This truly heroic struggle of masses of people needs to become even more massive, fired with the determination not to stop until there really is an end to everything that is captured and concentrated in the video of that pig in Minneapolis cruelly suffocating the life out of George Floyd, ignoring with a calm viciousness Floyd's repeated pleas for his life and cries that he could not breathe. And people everywhere need to take up and give powerful expression to the demand that the strutting tyrant Trump, the fundamentalist fanatic Pence, and their whole fascist regime must be out now. The greatest act of courage and the greatest contribution to ending the heartless oppression and the needless suffering of human beings everywhere would be to finally rise up and bring down this capitalist imperialist system that has spawned this fascist regime and bring into being a radically different and much better world on a completely different foundation without the exploitation, degradation, brutality, and terror that is the very basis and means for maintaining this system we are now forced to live under.
That was Donald Trump isn't tough. He's a bloated bag of fascist feces, part one. Next, Tucker Carlson, fascist Fox News, and the broadcast of white supremacy.
In the midst of the outpouring of outrage over the cold-blooded murder of George Floyd, Tucker Carlson uses a platform provided him by the fascist network calling itself Fox News to mock those protesting and deny the truth that there is a widespread and systematic reign of terror against black people in this country, which amounts to an actual ongoing genocide. Carlson might as well wear a Ku Klux Klan hooded sheet when he does his broadcast. It is easy to imagine Carlson, during slavery days, oozing admiration for the slave owners sitting on their verandas, drinking mint juleps, and smirking while their slaves were being whipped. We can also easily imagine him during the days of Jim Crow segregation and Ku Klux Klan terror, racing to be part of the leering crowds, cheering while a black man was lynched. And today he engages in sleazy attempts to downplay and justify the continuing murders of black people by police. He claims that statistics show that out of the hundreds of black people killed by police each year, most were armed. But the fact is that time after time, police murder unarmed black people on the street and even in their own homes. As for the killing of armed people, We know that police often claim that someone they murdered had a gun when they did not. And what honest and informed person doesn't know about police often planting a weapon after they have shot someone? Plus, simply the fact that someone has a weapon does not in itself justify killing them. Often people who have had a weapon are shot in the back while running away from police. Still, even if it were only 100 black people who were killed each year by police in completely unjustified circumstances, that would amount to 1,000 every decade. And even this understated count brings out the reality that since the 1960s, more black people have been killed by police than all those who were lynched during the whole time of Jim Crow segregation and Ku Klux Klan terror. And almost never are the police held accountable for this. Almost never are they even indicted and tried. And when they are put on trial, very rarely are they convicted and sentenced in accordance with the severity of the crime, murder, they have actually committed. As I have spoken to before, it is a bitter truth and a damning testament to the actual nature of the system in this country that every black male growing up in the South during Jim Crow had a reasonable fear of being lynched. The number who were actually lynched amounted to only about 5,000. But the reality that any black person could be lynched at any time for any reason or for no reason at all instilled an ever-present terror in black people as a whole. And today, the reality is this. With hundreds of black people and other oppressed people murdered by police every year, and black people as a whole subjected to systematic terror through things like stop and frisk, it is equally true that all young black males, and this is increasingly true of females as well, are forced to go through life in this country with the constant fear of being subjected to harassment, brutality, and even outright murder by the police. This is why black parents have to hold the conversation with their sons especially, giving them instruction that they hope will keep them from being murdered by police. This is why when someone like George Floyd is viciously murdered by police, so many black people, even among the more bourgeois, cry out, "That could have been me." In the twisted mind of Tucker Carlson, all these black people must be ignorant and hysterical, when in reality, they are responding to a very real and ongoing horror. Add to this the fact that through the workings of this system, which enslaved black people for centuries, then brutally exploited them for generations after the Civil War, and continues to systematically discriminate against them in every part of life, there are now millions of black people who are incarcerated or otherwise in the grip of the system of criminal injustice, which also systematically discriminates against black people. And you have what, yes, amounts to an ongoing genocide. Tucker Carlson should be sentenced to be black in America. If he survived for a week, there would be no end to his wailing and whining about how he can't believe that he's being so relentlessly subjected to unfair, unjust, cruel, and vicious treatment.
That was Tucker Carlson, fascist Fox News, and the broadcast of white supremacy. Next we'll hear, Donald Trump isn't tough. He's a bloated bag of fascist feces, part two. Who really has heart?
In Bloated Bag, part one, talking about bunker boy Donald Trump, who continues to threaten and is responsible for vicious repression against protesters, I made this point. Anybody can act tough when they are calling on a massive machinery of violence and destruction, like the U.S. military, to back them up. And I spoke to the fact that, in opposition to the coward bully Trump, the ones who are showing real courage and heart are the masses of people of all races and genders who have taken to the streets to demand an end to this brutality and murder, and have defied curfews and braved assaults from police and National Guard forces. If we go broader and deeper, beyond the confines of this country and the immediate time frame, we can see another shining example of people with real courage and heart going up against powerful oppressive forces. The Vietnamese people, who fought heroically and at the cost of great sacrifice to drive out their colonizing oppressors. As Malcolm X put it, these were a people of a poor nation who chased the French colonialists right out of their country. And then, after the U.S., which had backed the French colonialists in that war, took over directly and tried to dominate Vietnam, the revolutionary Vietnamese fighters, at the cost of great sacrifice, defeated the attempts of the most powerful military in the world to subjugate their country and forced it to withdraw. Unlike the U.S. military, that slaughtered huge numbers of Vietnamese civilians, or the fundamentalist Islamic fanatics of these times, who also slaughter and seek to terrorize masses of innocent civilians, the Vietnamese were fighting a war of liberation by revolutionary means. Or, coming back to this country, if you want to talk about courage and heart, how about the Black Panther Party, which began with a small number of black youth who went on armed patrols, legally at the time, in Oakland in the 1960s to prevent police from brutalizing and murdering black people, and stood up against murder and continuing heavy repression from the government as over the next few years, the BPP grew into a powerful revolutionary force throughout the country. And they did this in unity with revolutionary struggles going on throughout the world. How many people know or remember that the leader of the Black Panther Party, Huey Newton, declared that if they were needed, he was ready to send Black Panthers to fight on the side of the Vietnamese against the U.S.? Clearly, the Black Panthers in their revolutionary days were not the kind of Second Amendment people that Trump likes to talk about. And in recent days, particularly in the context of the mass outpouring against institutionalized racism and police terror, and with the repressive response of the Trump-Pence regime and the threats and attacks by the fascist base of this regime, there have been black people who have exercised their Second Amendment rights, in some cases raising political demands, such as the call for the World Court to investigate the United States for its murderous oppression of black people. Even though this does not represent the same kind of revolutionary outlook of the Panthers in their early days, it does involve an important stand. Although both the Vietnamese liberation fighters and the Black Panther Party eventually were taken off the road of revolution, there is still much to learn from their revolutionary heroism at the height of their inspiring struggles. Applying the lessons from previous revolutionary struggles and forces, and going still deeper, here's something worth thinking about. How about masses of black and brown youth today who, instead of killing each other, are taking up the 5-2-6 basic principles of revolution and are moving as a powerful positive force working for an actual revolution that will put an end to this oppressive system and bring something much better into being? a revolution based on the new communism, and aiming to put an end to all the ways in which people anywhere are exploited, abused, terrorized, brutalized, and slaughtered. Some additional notes. I was actively involved in opposing the U.S. imperialist war in Vietnam and in supporting and working with the Black Panther Party when it was the leading revolutionary force in the U.S. during the late 1960s. Even as the ideology and political program of the BPP was, as I have put it, a mixed bag, reflecting a combination of revolutionary nationalism and the inspiration and influence of communism in its most advanced expression at that time in China, which was then, under the leadership of Mao Zedong, carrying forward the socialist transformation of China itself while supporting revolutionary struggles throughout the world, including the mass uprising of black people within the U.S. In developing the new communism, I have drawn from the positive but also the negative experience of the communist movement historically, and in particular that of revolutionary China, and the bitter lessons of the restoration of capitalism there after the death of Mao in 1976, as well as the experience of revolutionary movements of various kinds in different countries. In a number of works, including Hope for Humanity on a Scientific Basis, Breaking with Individualism, Parasitism, and American Chauvinism, I have summed up key factors involved in why the revolutionary upsurge in the 1960s and into the early 1970s, not just in the U.S., but internationally, ebbed, and leading revolutionary forces of that time were defeated or transformed into reformist and in some cases even counter-revolutionary appendages of the imperialist system. The point and purpose of this work of mine and the new synthesis, the new communism it has brought forward, is to enable the struggle for the emancipation of the oppressed masses of humanity and ultimately humanity as a whole to overcome key obstacles and reach new heights, both in defeating and abolishing the existing oppressive system and in bringing a radically different and much better world into being. An introduction to the new communism and my role as a revolutionary leader in the article, Bob Avakian, A Radically Different Leader, A Whole New Framework for Human Emancipation, and access to my body of work can be found at revcom.us. The 5-2-6 refers to the five stops, five deep and defining contradictions of this system of capitalism imperialism, five ways in which this system oppresses people, plunders the environment, wages unjust wars, and continually commits massive crimes against humanity. The two choices I have sharply focused on. We have two choices: either live with all this and condemn future generations to the same or worse if they have a future at all, or make revolution. And the six points of attention for the revolution. The full presentation of the 5-2-6 can also be found at revcom.us.
That was Donald Trump Isn't Tough. He's a Bloated Bag of Fascist Feces, Part 2. Who really has heart? We want to close out this episode of Emancipate Humanity with Bob Avakian with this final piece. Colin Kaepernick, LeBron James, and the whole truth.
These days, with mass protests taking place after the murder of George Floyd, many people are saying that Colin Kaepernick was right when he kneeled on the football field during the national anthem to protest police brutality and murder. Of course, there are those diehard racists and outright fascists who continue to echo Donald Trump's attack on Kaepernick and other professional football players who have also taken part in such protests. In response to these attacks, many, including many prominent people, have spoken out to defend Kaepernick, which of course is very good and important. But at the same time, some of the expressions of support for Kaepernick have included things that are wrongly defensive and actually deny or distort crucial parts of Kaepernick's position. For example, LeBron James has wielded his considerable prestige in support of Kaepernick, and James has expressed his outrage over the murder of George Floyd and support for the outpouring that has erupted in response to this. But at the same time, James has insisted that Kaepernick was not disrespecting the flag or the U.S. military. Well, let's look at what Kaepernick actually said at the time in explaining his actions. Quote, "I am not going to stand up to show pride in a flag for a country that oppresses black people and people of color," unquote. Clearly, Kaepernick was disrespecting the flag, and righteously so. As he himself put it, why should he respect, show pride in, a flag for a country that oppresses black people and people of color? Why should anyone who stands against oppression? The flag is the symbol of what this country is really all about: the oppression of black people and people of color, and all the other monstrous oppression it carries out here and worldwide. As for the military of this country, here is the truth. It is not the case, as LeBron James and others have claimed, that this military protects the freedoms that people have in this country. What freedoms? The freedom to be brutalized, terrorized, and murdered by the police? To be mass incarcerated? To be discriminated against in every part of society? To be locked up in concentration camps on the border? To be subjected to systematic racial and gender oppression? To have the environment destroyed? The reality is that this military is, along with the police, the armed enforcer of all this. All the oppression, exploitation, and plunder, which is built into this system of capitalism imperialism, and to which it subjects masses of people in this country and billions all over the world, enforcing this with the most depraved violence and wanton destruction. As I have pointed out before, the U.S. military is, without the slightest exaggeration, a machinery of massive and unspeakable war crimes and crimes against humanity. And its actions in Vietnam constitute a systematic concentration of this, with a level of destructiveness and depravity that is almost unfathomable. The slaughter of millions of Vietnamese civilians, with incessant bombing and shelling, including of schools, hospitals, dams, and other crucial infrastructure, and widespread use of napalm, white phosphorus, Agent Orange, and millions of anti-personnel weapons, burning to death and maiming huge numbers of children and others, ruining the livelihood of millions of Vietnamese, destroying large parts of the soil and livestock so essential for the people in rural Vietnam, torture of people held as prisoners, including large numbers of civilians, male, female, old and young, including the very young, mutilating the bodies and wearing as trophies body parts of Vietnamese killed, mass rape of Vietnamese women and girls. If you don't believe or don't want to believe that this is true, get the book by Nick Terse, Kill Anything That Moves, The Real American War in Vietnam, and make yourself read it and keep reading it. And as I have also emphasized, what the U.S. military did in Vietnam is not some kind of exception or aberration. It represents the real nature and role of this military and of the system of capitalism imperialism that it enforces. To see more fully the truth of this, go to revcom.us and read the American Crime series. Everyone, and especially everyone who lives in this country, in whose name these countless crimes against humanity and war crimes are continually carried out, has the responsibility to know and act on this truth, the whole truth about this country and what it does throughout the world. The responsibility, yes, to disrespect, to deeply despise, and more than that, to actively oppose all this.
Go to the website revcom.us to find out more about Bob Avakian, where you can also find the written text of all the pieces we heard today. At revcom.us, you can access the full body of Bob Avakian's work, his essays, his sharp, timely articles, The Constitution for the New Socialist Republic in North America that he authored, along with books, films, and audio. You can also find the full body of his work at the website thebobavakianinstitute.org. We encourage you to watch our weekly YouTube program, the RNL, Revolution Nothing Less Show, which can be found at the YouTube channel, The RevComs, which also hosts this podcast, Emancipate Humanity with Bob Avakian. Find us on social media, at The RevComs. Become a subscriber to the channel for updates and special conversations.
We're going out now with Commander in Chief by Demi Lovato. Talk to you again next week.
Were you ever taught when you were young? If you mess with things selfishly, they're bound to come undone. I'm not the only one that's been affected and resented every story you've spun, and I'm a lucky one. Cause there are people worse off that have suffered enough. Haven't they suffered enough? But you can't get enough of shutting down systems for personal gain, fighting fires with liars and praying for rain. Do you get off on pain? We're not pawns in your game. Commander-in-Chief, honestly, if I did the things you do, I couldn't sleep. Seriously, do you even know the truth? We're in a state of crisis. People are dying while you line your pockets deep. Commander-in-Chief, how does it feel to still be able to breathe? We were taught when we were young, if we fight for what's right, there won't be justice for just some. Won't give up, stand our ground. We'll be in the streets while you're bunkering down. Loud and proud, best believe we'll still take a knee.